Hey everyone, welcome back to Daily Newsletter Digest. It's May 6th, 2026, and wow, we've got a packed show today.
Yeah, the AI news alone could fill the whole episode. We've got major policy shifts, some pretty wild physics breakthroughs, and oh, layoffs. Lots of layoffs.
Right. Let's jump into that because it's kind of the through line of the day. Coinbase just announced they're cutting 14% of their workforce. That's about 700 people. CEO Brian Armstrong is explicitly tying this to AI efficiency gains.
Wait, so they're saying AI is making them more productive, therefore they need fewer people?
That's the pitch. Armstrong's talking about creating these one-person teams, where a single employee manages AI agents that do the work of engineers, designers, and product managers. He wants to flatten the org to a max of 5 management layers under him.
Okay, but here's the thing. Coinbase's revenue dropped 26%, and trading volumes hit an 18-month low. So is this really about AI, or is this just a convenient excuse during a crypto winter?
You're echoing what analysts are saying. Mizuho's Dan Dolev told Bloomberg, the crypto downturn is probably the real reason, and AI is just an easy excuse. Though to be fair, it's likely both. The market's bad, and AI does let you do more with less.
This isn't isolated either, right? I saw something about a wave of crypto layoffs.
Exactly. We're over 1,200 crypto-specific job cuts in 2026 so far. Gemini cut about 30% of staff, Algorand 25%, Crypto.com 12%. That's around 180 people, even smaller cuts at OP Labs, Messari, PIP Labs. And crypto hiring is running about 80% below last year's pace.
That's brutal. Though I guess compared to 2022 to 2023, when Coinbase alone cut 950 jobs in one round.
Right. This is actually milder than the last crypto winter. But the AI angle is new. And it's not just crypto. Broader tech layoffs are at 73,000 in just the first 4 months of 2026, on pace to beat all of 2025.
So let's talk about that AI displacement piece, because there was a really sobering newsletter from a Columbia professor on this.
Yeah, Jeremy Ney, he runs the American Inequality Substack. He drew this parallel to JFK's response to 1960s automation. Back then, industrial robots, telephone switching automation, shipping containers, all of that drove unemployment from 4.8% to 7.1% in about a year. Kennedy responded with the Manpower Development and Training Act in 1962.
And Ney's argument is we need something similar now?
Exactly. He's citing Stanford data showing 78% of organizations used AI in 2024, up from 55% the year before. And get this, workers with AI skills now earn a 56% wage premium on average, up from just 25% a year earlier. That gap is accelerating.
So if you don't have those skills, you're falling behind fast.
And it's hitting specific groups hard. A Brookings analysis found 6.1 million workers, 86% of them women, mostly in clerical and administrative roles, concentrated in college towns and the Midwest. High AI exposure, low adaptive capacity, not a lot of savings.
What about the people who do get displaced? Do they bounce back?
Not really. Goldman Sachs looked at 40 years of federal data covering over 20,000 Americans. Technology-displaced workers take 1 month longer to find jobs, earn 3% less when they do, and their incomes stay 10 percentage points below peers even a decade later.
Wow, so this isn't a temporary dip. It's permanent scarring.
Exactly. And Federal Reserve economists confirmed about 500,000 fewer coders are working today than pre-LLM trends would have predicted. Stanford found young workers ages 22 to 25 in AI-exposed jobs like software development saw a 13% decline in employment since ChatGPT launched.
Okay, so that's the dark side. What's the government doing about it?
Not enough, according to Ney. The Department of Labor launched a course called Make America AI Ready. But NPR reporters who took it said it was basically just reminding people AI saves time, no real retraining. Ney says, we're treating a 21st-century revolution with a mid-century bureaucratic mindset.
What about the private sector? Are the AI companies doing anything?
OpenAI published a paper on April 6th proposing a 4-day workweek and a public wealth fund to distribute AI profits, basically corporate-backed UBI. Anthropic launched the Anthropic Institute to study societal disruption, but Ney's skeptical these are sufficient.
I mean, it sounds nice, but it's also kind of self-serving, right? We're going to automate your job, but don't worry, we'll give you a check.
Yeah, and without real policy teeth, it's just PR. Anyway, speaking of Anthropic, let's pivot to the AI news because there's a ton.
Okay, I saw something about them launching a joint venture.
Yeah, Anthropic and OpenAI both launched separate enterprise AI joint ventures on the same day. Anthropic's is backed by Blackstone, Hellman and Friedman, and Goldman Sachs' $1.5 billion, $300 million each. OpenAI's is called The Deployment Company, raised about $4 billion at a $10 billion pre-money valuation from 19 investors, including TPG and Bain Capital.
So they're both moving beyond just selling API access and actually building full-stack enterprise services?
Exactly. Box CEO Aaron Levy said, "Deploying AI into enterprise workflows requires change management, IT modernization, human-agent workflow design, stuff that APIs alone can't solve." Anthropic's already seeing finance as their second highest revenue vertical.
And I'm guessing there's a lot of money in that, because enterprises will pay way more than $20 a month.
Right, ChatGPT consumers are capped at $20 a month, but on the B2B side, Anthropic's per-user spend keeps expanding. They held a finance event in New York with agent templates for pitch generation, KYC screening, valuation reviews, integrated into FactSet, S&P Global, Morningstar.
Okay, so that's the business model shift. What about the actual models? I saw GPT 5.5 launched.
Yeah, OpenAI rolled out GPT 5.5 Instant as the new default in ChatGPT. It's got better factuality, stronger image understanding, and new personalization features like visible memory sources and Gmail integration.
Wait, visible memory sources? So you can see what the AI is remembering about you?
Exactly. It's pulling from saved memories, past chats, connected Gmail. But now it shows you where that context is coming from, which is a transparency win.
I like that. What about pricing? I remember there was some controversy around GPT 5.5 pricing.
Yeah, so it's nominally priced at 2x GPT 5.4, but the real-world cost increase is only 49 to 92% because it generates fewer completion tokens for longer prompts. So you're paying more per token, but using fewer tokens overall.
Clever. Okay, what else? I saw something about Claude Mythos being blocked by the White House.
Ooh, yeah, this is wild. The White House ordered Anthropic to halt expansion of access to Mythos under something called Project Glasswing. Specifically, they blocked the EU from getting access.
Wait, so the US government is preventing a private company from giving a model to Europe?
That's the implication. And it's raising questions about whether this is legitimate security concern or geopolitically motivated. Neil Chilson warned that informal, ad hoc government veto power can be worse than formal regulation because it favors insiders and enables corruption.
Was this even legal?
It's murky. Anthropic honored the request even though its legal basis is questionable. And it gets worse. The White House is reportedly considering an executive order to create an AI working group that would require government approval before any frontier model gets released.
So, like, prior restraint on AI models?
Exactly. This is a total 180 from the administration's earlier rhetoric about removing onerous regulation to beat China. Now they're moving toward a formal review process.
What triggered this?
Probably the cybersecurity implications of Mythos-level capabilities. There's concern about a hackastrophe where attackers would have a structural advantage over defenders. And because the US never built a thoughtful regulatory framework earlier, they're reacting in crisis mode.
Right, and now we're stuck with ad hoc White House decisions instead of clear rules?
Exactly. Zvi Malshewitz, he writes, "Don't worry about the vase," argues this is what happens when you poison the rhetorical well against any AI regulation. Now we're getting the worst possible version because it's being done on the fly.
Okay, let's switch gears a bit. There was something about a physics breakthrough with GPT-5.
Oh yeah, this is fascinating. Alex Lipsaska, he's a theoretical physicist who won the 2024 Breakthrough Prize, basically the Oscar for physics. He joined OpenAI after GPT-5 reproduced one of his best papers in 30 minutes.
Wait, a paper that took him how long originally?
He didn't specify, but he said a very long time. And then GPT-5 did it in 30 minutes. But it gets better. Harvard professor Andrew Strominger posed a year-long unsolved problem about single minus gluon tree amplitudes.
I have no idea what that is.
Me neither. But it's quantum physics stuff. Anyway, GPT-5 solved it in about a week before Strominger's plane even landed for his visit to OpenAI.
That's insane. How?
They discovered this priming technique. You give the model a textbook warm-up problem first, and then it can solve things it initially refused to attempt. OpenAI CRO Mark Chen figured that out.
So it's like getting the model warmed up before the hard problem.
Exactly. And then they did this vibe physics experiment, where they asked ChatGPT to independently research gravitons, intersection of gravity and quantum mechanics. It produced 110 pages of novel calculations in under 3 days.
Did it actually hold up?
Yeah, 3 weeks of human verification confirmed it. And the key thing is, this isn't just recombining existing work. These were genuinely unsolved questions that stumped experts for over a year.
Okay, so AI is now doing frontier physics research. That's kind of terrifying and exciting at the same time.
Yeah, Lipsaska frames it as expanding what a single theorist can explore, not replacing human taste and ambition. But still, the pace is wild.
All right, let's talk benchmarks because I know those are getting saturated too.
Yeah, Epoch AI put out a newsletter saying classic reasoning benchmarks like GPQA, graduate-level science questions, are now saturated. We need a new generation of benchmarks.
What are they proposing?
4 new directions. Multimodal tasks, longer time horizons, hard-to-grade outputs, and problems that exceed human expert ability. As an example, they created an IKEA furniture assembly benchmark. You give the AI labeled parts and instruction manuals.
How'd they do?
Top models scored only about 40%, so visual and spatial reasoning still lags behind text-only reasoning. And Claude Mythos jumped to 80% on a long context benchmark, where prior scores were under 40%. So first-gen long context benchmarks are basically done.
What about the superhuman stuff?
Frontier Math is targeting unsolved math problems with programmatic evaluation, and there's a new collaboration called Crux for real-world evaluations where success can't be automatically graded.
Okay, shifting to hardware for a sec. OpenAI is making a phone?
Yep, they're fast-tracking an AI agent phone for 2027. Mass production could start as early as first half of next year. It's got 2 AI processors and an image signal processor. They're also developing smart glasses, a lamp, and earbuds.
So they're going full hardware company, competing directly with Apple.
Speaking of Apple, they're taking the opposite approach. iOS 27, iPadOS 27, and macOS 27 will let users select from multiple third-party AI providers, including Google and Anthropic.
So instead of building the best AI, they're building the best platform for AI.
Exactly. It's a smart play. They get to stay neutral while benefiting from everyone else's R&D.
All right, let's talk markets and crypto for a minute. What happened with Drift Protocol?
So Drift got hit with a $295 million exploit back in April. They just published a token-based recovery plan backed by a $127.5 million Tether commitment.
And in exchange?
Tether gets USDT to become the platform's primary settlement asset. They're targeting a Q2 2026 relaunch.
What about Toncoin? I saw it surged.
Yeah, up about 33% to $1.90 after Telegram founder Pavel Durov announced Telegram is taking direct control of the TON network and becoming its largest validator.
Wait, I thought Tone deliberately kept distance from Telegram.
They did. This is a sharp governance reversal. It's kind of ironic, given the whole decentralization narrative.
Okay, we've got to talk about a 16Z's new crypto fund, because that's a big number.
Crypto Fund 5, $2.2 billion. They're framing it for the quieter phase of the crypto cycle, after the hype fades but where durable infrastructure gets built.
What are they focusing on?
Stablecoins are a big one. They point out stablecoin usage has grown through market downturns, people using them for cross-border payments, savings, purchases. That's network adoption, not just speculation.
Makes sense. What else?
On-chain capital markets tools, perpetual futures, prediction markets, lending, plus payments, financial services, creator platforms, decentralized infrastructure, and AI agent coordination systems.
AI agent coordination?
Yeah, so agents that can transact autonomously on users' behalf. It's kind of the intersection of crypto and AI.
Interesting. All right, let's talk about something completely different. There was a newsletter about AI agent insurance.
Yeah, this was from Opinion AI. The argument is that AI agent insurance is the next cyber insurance. Cyber insurance went from niche to $18 billion and is forecast to hit $100 billion by 2033.
And AI agent insurance would cover what exactly?
Hallucinations, discrimination, IP infringement, regulatory fines, business interruption, legal damages. Basically, when your AI agent screws up, who pays?
Right, and existing policies don't cover this?
No. ISO, that's the Insurance Services Office, just introduced AI exclusions under commercial general liability policies. So businesses deploying AI are exposed with no coverage.
Yikes. Who's offering this insurance?
Munich Re has Assure, which covers AI-specific risks. Armilla offers AI liability coverage and performance warranties. But the newsletter says there are only a handful of serious players globally, most with five or fewer employees.
So it's massively undersupplied.
Exactly. And lawsuits tied to generative AI grew by nearly 1,000% year over year. Meanwhile, 74% of small and mid-sized businesses already use AI, and 91% plan to expand use.
So there's huge demand and almost no supply. That's a market opportunity.
Yeah, the newsletter suggests starting by offering AI risk assessments to businesses, then partnering with licensed brokers to connect them with coverage. Target clients are AI agencies, SaaS startups, voice agent builders.
Okay, let's shift to something lighter. There was a newsletter about a massive telescope ranch in Texas.
Yeah, Core Memory wrote about Starfront Observatories. It's this huge facility with hundreds of telescopes spread across ranch land, all arranged in deliberate patterns with motorized tracking systems.
How'd they find out about it?
Viral images on X. The author saw these photos showing the scale and organization and basically had to go see it in person.
That's cool. I love that kind of niche obsession.
Totally. All right, we should wrap up, but let's hit a few quick hits. Anheuser-Busch InBev reported their first increase in drinks sold in 3 years, 12% revenue growth, mostly driven by Brazil.
Brazil hit record volume growth, right?
Yeah, shares of their Sao Paulo subsidiary jumped the most in 27 years. They also overtook Heineken in Mexico. North America is still declining, though.
What about markets overall?
NASDAQ hit 25,326, up over 1%. S&P at 7,259, up 0.81%. Bitcoin at $81,562, up just over 2%.
Shopify tanked though, right?
Yeah, down 15.62% after reporting slowing revenue growth. That was the big drag on tech sentiment.
Okay, and there was something about the Supreme Court and voting rights?
Yeah, Nate Silver wrote about Louisiana v. Calais. The decision weakens the Voting Rights Act, allowing Republicans to redraw majority-minority districts that were previously protected.
How does that play out?
Silver argues the real impact is enabling Republicans to district out Democrats in those districts. Virginia passed a referendum allowing Democrats to gerrymander, but the Calais ruling means the overall map will likely have a slight Republican bias.
What about California?
Newsom's map is expected to reduce Republican seats to around 4, but Democrats could potentially pack them into as few as 1 to 3 or even 0 districts.
Wow. That would be aggressive.
Yeah, but Silver's broader point is that electing more Democrats actually increases minority representation in Congress, because nearly half of Democratic House members are racial or ethnic minorities, versus under 10% of Republicans.
So the conventional wisdom about protecting majority-minority districts might be backwards?
At least partially. He also shows that black representation is more distributed than people assume. 9 black members currently represent districts that are 10% or less black.
Interesting. All right, we've got to talk about that .com flashback piece because it's eerily relevant.
Yeah, this was from Kakashi's newsletter. It's about how Global Crossing and QuestMobile used capacity swaps to fake revenue during the .com era.
How'd that work?
Company A sells $100 million of fiber capacity to Company B. Company B simultaneously sells $100 million back to Company A. Both book $100 million in revenue, but the purchase gets buried as a capital expenditure amortized over 20 years.
So zero net economic value, but the income statement looks great.
Exactly. QuestMobile reported over $1 billion in network capacity revenue in 2001. More than 2/3 were round-trip swaps. The SEC later found over $3.8 billion in fraudulently recognized revenue between 1999 and 2002.
And the parallel to today's AI boom is?
GPU-4 cloud credit swaps, hyperscalers backstopping neocloud debt while signing capacity commitments, invented metrics like remaining performance obligations that blend binding and non-binding commitments.
So the author's asking whether these transactions reflect genuine demand or just circular money flows.
Right. And Global Crossing filed for bankruptcy in January 2002, fourth largest in U.S. history at the time. $54 billion in investor losses, nearly 10,000 jobs.
Okay, that's sobering. Let's end on something fun. There was a Money with Katie essay about the TV show Alone.
Yeah, she uses it to explore the psychology of money and values. The show drops 10 people in the Arctic with 10 items each and a $500,000 prize for whoever lasts longest.
And season 11 had 2 contrasting finalists?
Yeah, Timber. A guy raised in an off-grid survivalist cult tapped out voluntarily on day 83, one day short of what would have been a record. He wrestled with whether winning $500,000 would compromise his identity and his humanitarian work.
And the other guy?
William stayed the full duration, motivated entirely by family. He said winning the money would let them do things we never thought possible before.
So two totally valid but opposite decisions.
Exactly. And Katie's point is both reflected internal coherence, acting in alignment with their deepest values rather than what's externally rational.
I like that framing. All right, we've got to wrap. What should people watch for this week?
Keep an eye on whether the White House actually issues that AI executive order. Also, Anthropic's Code with Claude developer conference is May 6th in San Francisco. They might unveil that proactive assistant Orbit everyone's talking about.
And more layoff announcements, probably.
Unfortunately, yeah. All right, everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more news.
See you then.